Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back in hour number two. Fantasy Sports Today on FNTSY. Thanks for joining us, Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh. So, we talked about the NBA a lot in the first hour, hour number two. We're going to talk a little bit about that because there's obviously a story dangling out there which does not have a resolution as of yet. And we'll get to a little bit more about some NFL stuff later this hour. And clearly, the big question I have to ask, did you know Aaron Rodgers was dating Danica Patrick? I was like yeah. Watching stuff on Memorial Day. I wasn't here last weekend, and I'm sitting there watching the Indy 500 coverage or whatever before the pre-race stuff. I had no idea. Yeah. Like, am I just totally lost?
Uh-huh. You are. This is what is expected of someone who would defend a Kevin Durant going to Golden State decision or think that LeBron's on the greatest.
So here's the problem. I always historically considered myself a person that was perhaps a little younger than his years. I was immersed in pop culture. But you know what the reality was? It's because I was single for a long time. I got married a little bit later than some of my friends. I could pay attention to this stuff. And then 7 years ago, I got married, had kids. I had a son 6 years ago, and it's all out the window. I can't pay attention. And plus, I started broadcasting.
You were trying
so I got
to
like
who was
two
on the
jobs.
Market. Now it doesn't matter.
I've been broadcasting during that. So there's like two jobs. I got two kids. I got no time for this stuff. I don't look at any of the pop culture stuff if it's not sports related. But I don't know. I guess I just missed the Aaron Rodgers.
They went to a Milwaukee Bucks game together, I think, in the postseason when they played the Celtics. I'm pretty sure.
Maybe I did know that.
I feel like you
did. I did see that.
I think you did.
I probably did. I just don't care, really. But I do a little bit. I think it's kind of interesting. That's an interesting power couple. But, yeah, anyway, she's done with racing. Stinks that she crashed in the last race. But whatever. She's healthy and happy and all good. So good for them. A couple of young kids just out there dating. Good for them. Yeah, that's right. Rapscallions. That's such an old word for you to use. Anyway. The one thing we didn't talk about is the spread for tomorrow. So I want to call Golden State. It's now Westgate is minus 12. So Golden State 12-point favorite. You like the Dubs or the Cavs?
I would take the Cavs because I'm a fool.
It's too many points.
This is the thing, and I don't know if we will get into it at all on tomorrow's show. But to me, the thing is, I can see both outcomes. That's how I kind of felt going into game one, where I was like, maybe the Warriors come out super sloppy and the Cavs see an opportunity and they're able to grab hold of it, or LeBron continues the trend of his worst game of each series being in game one and the Warriors lace him by 30. I felt like they were both in play. After game one, I still feel like both things are in play. Like, I could see the war because this is what Golden State does, is they rest on the laurels of accomplishments that they've yet to accomplish, but probably will. Where they'll come out to game two, and they'll
I can't believe how much you hate these guys.
Am I wrong? They
are accomplishing a lot.
Wait, no. I didn't say that they're not accomplishing. After they blew the 3-1 lead that very first game, if you remember, they were home. They were playing the San Antonio Spurs. It was the first game after they blew a 3-1 lead and after Kevin Durant blew a 3-1 lead. And they got blown out by the Spurs. And they were like, yeah, we needed a wake-up call. How do you need a wake-up call at that point? They said it in the Western Conference Finals that year to the Spurs. Like, this team needs wake-up calls that they're the only ones that need. It's because they know how talented they are. I don't find that to be some slanted view because of my disdain for some decisions that are made. I think that's okay. A fair analysis.
I got it. But yes, but I think you are I think you are swinging the pendulum too far in the other way, as if they are an arrogant team that isn't working hard. I do think sometimes there's a dynamic that exists on that team, and we've seen it manifest with KD, particularly this postseason, that they don't know who needs to take control in the moment. They generally play good team basketball. They move the ball well. They take open shots as often as they can. But sometimes there's dynamic, clearly in these playoffs, where they don't know who the lead dog is. And that can sometimes be confusing on the basketball court. I think that's their nature of it. But I don't want to imply, and I don't want to break them down too much more, because we got a three-hour show tomorrow to do, and we could talk about the game at length. So I'm going to ask you again. Minus 12, you're taking the Cavs.
I would.
Yes.
You know what I would maybe do? See this. I don't bet enough to know how that would play out. But what if, like, so would it be a okay? See, because I don't think I would want to take the Cavs to, like, keep it close, like the minus 12. I'd rather, like, take my odds on the Cavs winning the game, and then can you cover it on the back end by taking the Warriors to cover that spread? Because those feel like the two outcomes.
I think what you could do is put $100 on the Warriors to cover the 12 and put $100 on the Cavs money line. And if the Cavs win, you're in the money. Plus 550. It's a big number.
Yes, right, maybe you only need to lay down I think 50 on the Cavs to win, put $100 on the Warriors to cover, and you'd come out at least good on if either, as long as one of them hit.
Yeah. Of course. I think you want the Cavs to hit, but you'll be fine. You win $50 the other way or $45 the other way.
I think
that's the way to do it. See, you're learning, bud. That's the way to do it. You just hedge. $100 on the Warriors to cover, $50 on the Cavs money line, you're in the money. There's no way to lose there. So,
do you feel strongly enough about one?
Let me back up. There's definitely a way to lose that bet the way I described it, because if the Warriors win and don't cover, then you're screwed. So, I want to talk myself out of it. So, I would probably take the Warriors in this one. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, because of the reasons I mentioned the first hour about nobody talking about them and them realizing, man, we're just not sharp enough right now, we'll do it. And maybe Kevin Durant can stop doing ISO plays and get them back to getting their open shots. Anyway, the big story of the week, that clearly that took over the big story. The biggest story in the NBA is going to be J.R. Smith's blunder. But off the court, the Brian Colangelo saga in Philadelphia is clearly a big deal. There's so much internet sleuthing going on, some of which is pretty amazing. Now, that worries me at times, because I've seen internet sleuthing go horribly wrong and people be accused of terrible things because people have been doing internet sleuthing and putting together their own theories. I remember back during the Boston Marathon bombing, not to bring the show down, but I remember a lot of people finding people and pouring through photos and making their own armchair investigations from the seat of their desk in their basement as to who might have been guilty. And it was accusing people that had nothing to do with anything wrong. So I get worried about that. Now, this is a far lighter topic, but I don't want to get people accused of things they aren't doing. But all the paths are leading to the fact that Brian Colangelo and or his wife have been using Twitter as a way to vent or criticize or anonymously ponder or defend themselves in various ways. The wife obviously defending him. Her name's Barbara Bottini. I wouldn't normally bring people's family into the mix, but she seems to be right at the center of it. And it's really an amazing job done by The Ringer. I thought it was an excellently written article, and I thought he was as fair as he could be about it. He didn't make an accusation, and I thought he did a really thorough job of explaining where the smoking gun lies here. And the smoking gun lies in the fact that he called the Sixers to approach this topic. He knows for a fact that only one person was told about the burner Twitter accounts, and within hours, those burner Twitter accounts had gone from public to private. I think that's the smoking gun. Clearly, Colangelo himself either did it or contacted someone to make sure those accounts were then private, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was Ben Dietrich, I believe, was the writer of the piece. That's really impressive.
That's right, Ben Dietrich.
To know how to go about that, honestly. I don't know if it popped into your mind at all. But you know what I mean? Just because, I mean, we're in the sports world, like we're all creating sports content. To have that almost like FBI level mindset of, you know, give him two, let's see what happens with the other three. I think that is absolutely the gotcha moment there where, I mean, what is the, what I was kind of thinking about this is what is your best case scenario for Colangelo? Like, I feel like your best case is to be able to say he wasn't running the accounts himself. I don't know how you would be able to go about an argument to
he
say that
he already admitted
knowledge.
To running one of them, though.
Right.
He already admitted to running one of them.
That's true.
So, at a base level, he already admitted to running an anonymous Twitter account. Now, the one thing I'd have to do is parse which account was saying what. But there were some, and not just Twitter, people have done additional breakdowns of certain handles on message boards and that kind of stuff where this stuff was going on. It's pretty amazing, right? Brian Colangelo has been an NBA executive at a high level for 27 years. Started in 91 with the Suns. He was their general manager in 95. His dad, obviously, famously owner of teams and executive and ran USA Basketball, extremely well respected. Brian Colangelo found his way to Philadelphia via his father because the NBA felt like the Sam Hinkie super tank plan was going awry. Now, obviously, people like, I guess I could say me and probably you, Kevin, and others feel like Sam Hinkie wasn't given enough of an opportunity to see the plan through. But because of his wheeling and dealing, he was able to acquire players like Embiid and make sure that they had an opportunity to grab Ben Simmons and Dario Saric and put them in a position to trade up to get Markelle Fultz, although personally I think they should have stayed where they were or traded up and taken Jason Tatum. I thought that at the time. I clearly think that now. So there's a lot behind this. The best case scenario for Colangelo going forward, to answer your question, is that I think after the NBA Finals, and I would imagine there's been some discussion between Philly and Adam Silver. Mm. Please wait to make any announcements until after the NBA Finals is over, because I don't want that story to take over our primary product and our advertiser's primary product. So I think he's forcibly resigns or is fired with cause. I think they'll work it out. Bottom line is he's either going to be forcibly resigned or fired. He obviously, if he's guilty of these allegations, is a fireable offense. He's sharing team and private information, including medical information, over the internet. And I think that's going to be it. I don't think he ever works in the NBA again.
So I will quickly say, and just in terms of waiting for him to be fired, I think actually it'll probably come throughout these finals, just because the latest that this finals could go, and I don't know if it'll go, I mean, it probably doesn't go seven. I know neither of us are predicting it to, would be the 17th. So that's pretty much 2.5 weeks. And then the turnaround is that Thursday, the 21st, would be the NBA draft. So I think that they would want to make their decision, go out there, make their hire. Because I know the Pistons, I believe, they just opened up their GM search as well. So I think the Sixers would like to make sure that they're out there and getting the best possible candidates, because their position would be more attractive than the one in Detroit. In terms of the...
I think they would have to operate without a GM for the short term. I think they just hire a GM after the draft who's going to have
to be
comfortable with whoever it is they picked. Yeah, I mean, that would be a really quick turnaround to bring a can't. It's the second. So with inside of 3 weeks, you're going to search for, find a GM, integrate him into your scouting department and assistant GMs, and know who he is going to pick and feel comfortable with it, that seems to be a quick turnaround. I think Brian Colangelo is probably on the sidelines, and then after they make the pick, they go out and find a guy that's comfortable with the set of players that they have, which everybody should be.
So I still disagree, because for me at least, and I don't know how you feel about this, I do think that there's a clear candidate in mind. To me, that it's a no-brainer of a hire in David Griffin, and I think that it is for a number of reasons. I think the main reason it got brought up,
I think it'd be a good hire too,
is the connection to LeBron. But it is similar to my argument for teams that wanted to get LeBron, bringing in David Fizdale. Even if that doesn't get you LeBron, you're left with someone who's really, really good at their job. And the same applies to David Griffin. Another reason, though, why I think that perhaps they would want to have him pre-draft, and I think that you're 100% right, that is a really, really difficult turnaround to get on the same page with a scouting department when you have the 10th pick as well, which is an incredibly crucial pick. The reason why I think, if that is the direction they go with their hire, is David Griffin is really, really smart with the moves that he makes, and I think the Sixers are going to want to be active in shopping that pick. So I don't think that if you go into that draft without a GM, you're just going to sit there at 10, follow the big board. This is our best guy. We'll take him. This team has, I think it's 6 picks total in this draft. I think that'd be...
But it can't be Brian Colangelo can't be the only guy that knows who you're picking. If that's the case, then you got a broken organization. I would imagine the rest of the assistant GMs in the scouting department have a good sense of what's going on. Very often assistant GMs are about to be future GMs, so I think they can handle a draft in conjunction with one another and Brett Brown. But
what
you might be right. They might want to move quickly, and David Griffin mm-hmm. would be a great hire, I think.
And I think that you would, in an ideal world, want your new GM to be in lockstep with those type of decisions. Like, maybe you bring David Griffin in and you're like, hey, listen, like, we have a lot of stuff that we have pre-planned that we think makes sense. And maybe that's part of the meeting, right? In the hiring process is, do you see, are you kind of in line with where we're assessing our moves this upcoming offseason and in the draft specifically?
Okay, we'll come back. I want to get your thoughts a little bit on the Colangelo thing, mm-hmm. and then we'll move over to the NFL in the next segment. It's Mike and Kevin on FST. We'll be back right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
FST on FNTSY. Thanks for joining us via Fantasy Sports Radio app, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, terrestrial radio stations across the country. Thank you very much. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio, at Mike Blewett, at The Kevin Walsh. I should have put a poll together today, but we'll see if we can do one, something fun. We'll get that going maybe here after we do some football in a minute. But before that, I want to ask, if you play DFS and you haven't tried playing mybookie.ag player props, then you're missing out. Their player props tool allows you to avoid sharks, winning 90% of the money in DFS. So invest in the players that you want without salary caps. Forget having to create multiple lineups. Just ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches. You go to mybookie.ag, open a new account, and enter the promo code FNTSY, and you'll receive 50% deposit bonus. Often, a player, say, David Johnson, for instance, will be chalk in DFS and be 80% owned in tournaments because everyone will think the play is obvious. Don't be a loser and eat DFS chalk. Be a winner and play the mybookie.ag player prop. Plus, you can access the one sport not yet touched by DFS, the sport of kings. That's horse racing. So it's simple. Just go to mybookie.ag, open an account, and enter the promo code FNTSY and receive your 50% deposit bonus. Click the player props tool, choose your player prop, and collect your winnings. That's mybookie.ag. Enter promo code FNTSY. So let's just wrap up the Colangelo thing really quickly, and then you got some questions for me about the NFL and fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I did a draft this morning just so I could be look, I'm doing some writing right now for exclusive Edge package, which you can find on rotoexperts.com. So I'm doing some writing there, offensive line stuff. I do it every year. It's sort of a long article, but it gives people some insight into the offensive lines. I'm not patting myself on the back, but if you were listening last summer, you would have heard me talking about the concerns with the Bengals, the Seahawks, and the Giants and their rushing attacks, and I think that bore out to be true. Can't get them all right. Good offensive lines like Dallas and Tennessee and Oakland even struggled last year. So or lines that I thought were going to be good. Anyway, I'm doing all that writing. I'm getting into the football swing of things in full swing now. And we're going to talk some football in a few minutes. But give me your thoughts on the Colangelo thing. I don't know there's much more we can say, but I think you brought up a good angle with the GM search. Anything else you have to comment on about it?
I think one of the things that jumped out to me in reading a lot of the tweets is this ends up being a really, really good thing for Philly. Like, even if it doesn't result in David Griffin and LeBron James, there was, to me, one of the most alarming, and a lot of the tweets were alarming, was how he clearly is not going to ever get over people giving credit to Sam Hinkie. And it sees him hold this grudge against Joel Embiid. And clearly the faces of this franchise are both Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. But clearly, whether it be Colangelo, his wife, or somebody in the know, he only wants Ben Simmons to be the face of that franchise because that was his selection. And I think that was a jarring sign of toxicness that could seep
toxicity.
In. That I was trying to say, but I knew it wouldn't come off right, so I appreciate you very much. I think that seeping in could cause a rift that would have been really detrimental to what you have there in Philly. Because I remember I was listening to someone just kind of make this point of, you know, having...
Yeah, but you're saying the Simmons thing, so how does he rectify the Markelle Fultz situation?
I think what it was is Ben Simmons, everything was going great, so he paraded him to the front. Things with Fultz were going bad, right? So he can get blamed for that. So that's why he was trying to spin it and say, this is Fultz's fault, not mine. It was very, to me, I don't want to say sick and twisted sounds perhaps extreme, but to the lengths to defend every single pretty much aspect of his basketball career, replacing Sam Hinkie, being replaced by Masayuri in Toronto, Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, saying that they are all failures because of Hinkie or themselves, taking all of the credit, or not all of the credit, but saying, look at how great Ben Simmons is, that's the face of our franchise, and then putting the blame on Markelle Fultz. I mean, some of the Fultz situation, I mean, that is dirty laundry that does not need to be out there. The medical record stuff, that cannot be out there.
Yeah.
And I think...
And Jahlil Okafor's medical record stuff, saying that he failed physicals, mm-hmm. and why don't you ask this guy? Yeah. And that's clearly inside information about Jahlil Okafor's knee that didn't need to be out there. I did think the tone of it, when people started focusing on his wife, I did think the tone of the tweets leads more to somebody defending him. And there is evidence via timestamp, which you can't be 100% certain of, that some of these Twitter accounts were active as he was actively giving a press conference, meaning that he couldn't be operating them. And people have reverse matched it via Twitter searches and Twitter resets, her phone number, the end of her phone number, to three of the burner Twitter accounts. So it's conceivable that she's defending him, you know, and like talking about their son and talking and following the University of Chicago basketball team, which, you know, all there's a lot of personal stuff involved there. As a mom and as a wife, I get it. But that you want to defend him and you want, but I think most executives would tell you, and I'm friends with some NBA executives, to be honest, who they shall not remain nameless, and they shall remain nameless. And I'm not going to tell you even what organization they work for at this moment, but their wives would not get involved, and they wouldn't want their wives to get involved in like that. You get into that job, and it's a public job, and I know a guy with an extremely public NBA job, and he can take the heat. Believe me, he understands the job. He's gonna take heat, and he has taken it. And overall, he feels confident in his ability to run this franchise. So that's part of it. And I think no NBA executive, while they can appreciate their family defending them, would really want them doing that in a public forum like that. It's obviously created more embarrassment for him, and it may contribute to the end of his career.
Yeah, I think the speculation as to whether it is his wife or not, ultimately, what I think this whole thing boils down to, at the end of the day, again, you can't defend incompetence, and to allow something like this to happen would be that. So even if it weren't directly him, to allow something like this to get to this point, it's just incompetence, and I don't think that there is any excuse for it. So listen, I think this is another scenario, not similar to JR, but in respects where it's like you kind of want to feel sympathy for a guy because this is probably going to end his career within basketball, but it does seem self-inflicted. So in a way, I think maybe it is a little difficult to...
Not a lot of people. I got to be honest. There's a lot of people that aren't crying tears over it either.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like the guy that has a lot of fans. I think the manner in which the Colangelos were brought into the Philadelphia organization wasn't comfortable for everybody in Philly because they felt like they knew what they were doing and they were turning the barge around, and they did. And they didn't necessarily need help from the Colangelos. I get why the league was uncomfortable with it and wanted to step in, but you know, if the league had waited a year, they probably would have seen the benefits of what Hinkie had done. I'm not declaring him the savior of the Philadelphia franchise, but he obviously acquired some good players for them, right?
I have a Hinkie question.
I think we've done a lot of NBA. We've done an hour and a half of NBA, which is more than we've ever done on this show. And I know you have some football stuff.
Yes.
There's crazy football stories out there about Peyton Manning and Al Jazeera and that he took HGH and that whole thing. And, man, that is a tired story. It just is.
We're doing that again.
I know some people want to be out there. No, they are. They're trying to. They're saying that the Manning's lawyers – confirmed that he took it. I think it's nuts. I can't. They've already recanted their story in the first place, so I can't go back into that. But there's stuff like that out there. My point of saying all that is, it's kind of a slow news time. You know, we've gotten through OTAs. We're going to do June mini camps, and then the players are going to be off, which is the worst time of year for NFL GMs, because it's the time of year the players start getting in trouble when they don't have to be at the facility for a month. So a couple more weeks of the OTA stuff, but we're going to start talking a little bit more about the Roto Experts and the Exclusive Edge Package, which will launch shortly. And my articles in there and other people's articles in there, we'll be promoting it quite a bit. There's great information in there from myself, from Jake Seely, from Scott Engel, from Corey Parson, from Matt Modica, and many more. So we'll continue to talk about, promote, and talk about articles within the context of that Exclusive Edge Package in the coming days and weeks ahead. So I did a mock draft right before we got on here, and you had some questions about some mock drafts that you've been doing. So hit me up.
I've been in a number of best balls. I'm actually on the clock right now. I decided to save this. So I'll let you make this pick for me. It's a 10th overall pick. It's only a six-person draft. So I started Le'Veon Bell. We got four top guys on the board: Kareem Hunt, Leonard Fournette, Melvin Gordon, Odell Beckham. Your pick. You decide.
So, I'm sorry. Say it again.
Kareem
Hunt.
Trying
to find my draft. Say it one more time. Yeah.
These are the top four guys on the board based on ADP on the PlayDraft app. Kareem Hunt, Leonard Fournette, Melvin Gordon, and Odell Beckham. I already have Le'Veon Bell.
Is it PPR?
Ooh, is it half point or full point? I should know this. I'm forgetting. I think I can figure this out. It is.
I'm going to go by PPR just so we don't waste time. So yeah. It was Fournette, Beckham,
it's half
Hunt,
point.
Gordon. I'm going Odell on this one.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping to do. That's great. So
you already got Le'Veon Bell in there. You're going to get a whole bunch of catches if it's a PPR league. You got Le'Veon 75, Odell's 90. It's a lot of catches, so I'm going to go with that. I don't think there's a bad pick in there, but I think you want to go with Odell. Fournette, right now, according to Fantasy Pros, their rankings in PPR leagues, they have Odell Beckham at 7th overall. They have Melvin Gordon at 17th overall, Leonard Fournette at 18th overall, and where's Kareem Hunt? I'm missing him. He's at 12 overall. So they have Odell high. I'll go with Odell too. There's a lot of talk about the Giants kind of cratering and being a bottom five team. I've seen that projection from some people. I'm not down with that projection at all. I do have real questions about Eli, but I'm not one of the people that was pushing Eli out the door necessarily. I don't have an issue with the Saquon pick. I didn't think they were doing it, but I didn't have an issue with it. I do think they can get a year out of Eli before they move on, maybe even two. But we'll see. I do say that with some trepidation, but I'm not, again, I'm not one of the guys pushing him out the door. So there you go.
Are we going to become a pro-Giants show? Because I also agree. I do not see the bottom five team that everybody's expecting. I think there's too much talent there. I to sell me on that, you would have to sell me on Pat Shurmur being way over his head as a year one head coach. That would have to be the angle to get me to come to that point.
Yeah, and I'm not there.
Neither am I.
Do they bounce all the way back to 13-3 like a couple of years ago? Or is it 11-5? I'm sorry.
It was 11-5
a couple of years ago. Probably not. But I could see the Giants being a 9-7 team and challenging for a playoff spot. I could see that. There's enough talent on the defense. They brought in Alec Ogletree, the first real linebacker they've had in a long time. They obviously have talent in the defensive backfield with Jenkins and Collins. Defensive line, they've made a lot of they're making some changes there now, but it's a talented enough defense, even if it's a little older, to, you know, be a middle of the pack. Let's just call it middle of the pack. They were really good 2 years ago and cratered last year, but let's just call it middle of the pack there. Saquon Barkley, they had Nate Solder and Will Hernandez. The absolute biggest problem with their team last year is offensive line, last 2 years. So I think that helps to address what they need for Barkley and Eli. I don't think it's fixed, but I think it's certainly a step in the right direction. Eric Flowers can maybe play left tackle or left guard or whatever they're going to do with him if he's even on the team, if they don't ditch him for a pick for next year. I think they would have already done that if they could. But, you know, if Eric Flowers comes in and is a bad citizen, like people suggested he was at the end of last season, then I think, you know, you can move on from him during the training camp session. So there you go. That's kind of my hot take on the Giants. Went through a whole bunch. The receivers are obviously fine with Odell and Shepard and even Roger Lewis, and then you got Evan Ingram. I think it's a really good set of pass catchers in my estimation.
Would you say, because, I mean, I am just thinking this through, right, in terms of, again, because I agree with you on all this Giants stuff. What are the expectations for the offense? Because even if the defense was incredible 2 years ago, it was horrible last year. But in both years, the offense was the idea around was it is Odell Beckham, and that is all that they have to offer. Are the expectations that this is a top 10 offense in the league this year? Because when you think about the talent, right? I mean, Odell Beckham is one of the best number ones in the whole league. Evan Ingram seems to be, at least in terms of offensive production, seems to be one of the top tight ends. That's what people are expecting. I think Sterling Shepard's a really good number two. And Saquon Barkley, I mean, we're talking about as a top 10 running back in the league, and the offensive line made some improvements. So is that what the expectations are?
I mean, the last 2 years, so 2 years ago, even when they had the good season, 11-5, they were 26th in points scored, 25 in yardage gained. Last year, they dropped to 31st in points scored. They actually had a few more yards, so 21st in yards gained. But a lot of other inefficiencies regarding average drive time and a number of plays and all that kind of stuff. So the amazing thing is that McAdoo was brought in as a head coach. I think the Giants are the only team in the last 2 years that had not scored 30 points in a game offensively. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. They did not score 30 points in a game in McAdoo's entire tenure. So
that's so crazy.
It is. I know, especially with some of the firepower they have on that team. So,
but also because of what he was supposed to be. And like what he, like.
I agree.
Oh, that's wild.
They just changed up the way Eli was doing things. The offensive line was terrible. The defense made up for it 2 years ago and just kind of broke down in the middle of the year last year. So just come, we'll come back, talk a little bit more about Kevin's draft, about my draft, and more about the NFL next on FST.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on FST, getting it done here on Saturday morning till 12 o'clock, and after us, we got plenty more content. We got In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. I always get that mixed up. I want to say the Bogman and the Bogman and Welsh, but it's Bogman and the Welsh. 12 to 3, and then from 3 to 6, Weekend Fantasy Update. That is Joe Galina and George Kurtz, our good buddy George Kurtz, who filled in for me last week, but you can hear him on various shows, Weekend Fantasy Update, Fantasy Football Frenzy on the weekends, all good stuff. So there you go, on the schedule for the rest of the day. After that, just kind of replays of our show, of Craig Carton during the week. By the way, Craig Carton, he is now Carton and Friends, which is Craig Carton, 9 to 1, 9 to 12. Well, it's 9 to 1, but 9 to 12, it is syndicated. They are now, that's the point of me saying this. They are now syndicated across the country. It'll be on over 100 radio stations by the end of this year. And our show may very well go with that in some respects to other terrestrial radio stations. So, you know, keep that pirate ship afloat, as to borrow a line. But Craig and Corey Parson and Michelle Serpico, you can hear them every day from 9 to 1 on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you hear some of their replays on the weekends, early in the mornings, late at night, all that kind of stuff. So you'll be hearing Kevin and I here on the weekends for the foreseeable future, Saturdays and Sundays. We're going to get deeper into football as we go throughout the weeks. Clearly, we'll keep covering baseball and the NBA for the next week. So it's game two tomorrow, Kev, and then we got game three on Tuesday. Is that right? Would that be right?
Oh, I don't. Is it? That would be. Would that make any sense though? It shouldn't it be Wednesday for the travel? If they took the 2 days off,
they space it out so much.
I think it's Wednesday and then Friday. I want to say for three and four.
That is an interminable amount of time to play three basketball games.
It is no, honestly,
it really is.
I think it is. I think it is absolutely ridiculous that this started May 31st, and it could go all the way to June 17th. That is a ridiculous length of a
game. Two series is tomorrow. Game, you're right. Game three is Wednesday. Game five, Friday. So that would be four games in 7 days. That's not that bad. But then it would be, oh yeah, that's the kicker. So if it goes to five, which we hope. We don't want to see a sweep, right? But if it goes to game five, they're off Saturday, Sunday, and then back to Golden State. They're both weekend days, they just take off to travel back to Golden State. It's kind of nuts. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that anymore. We're done with the NBA for the day. We talked a lot about it. It's exhausting because you're such a huge NBA fan, and you're really dug in about hating the Warriors and loving LeBron. I don't even disagree with you. Necessarily on
see,
some
that's
of this
what
stuff,
I'm saying. You're not even disagreeing with me. It's just because I'm passionate and
necessarily
I have an opinion. I really don't think that I picked the Warriors to win. Like, I don't want to ever get painted with a biased brush. I try to avoid that, and I'm going to continue to be passionate about it. But I do feel like I do it to the best of my ability to not be biased.
No, I think you're fine. Look, you're not just picking LeBron because you like him. I get it. And the LeBron-Jordan thing, we joked around. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow because we joked around a little bit over text. It'll take a whole segment. Yeah. And I am of the age that I should be more of a Jordan guy just based on how I grew up. And I was in my teens and 20s in the 90s. But I'm close. Like, I think it's pretty close. And I can make a LeBron argument just as easy as I can make an MJ argument at this point. But let's talk a little bit more about your draft that you had going on. I somehow lost the draft. I did it on Fantasy Pros, which is a site I like a lot, but I somehow just screwed up this draft. I don't know how I did that. I lost my team, and I liked it. It was David Johnson, and I had Leonard Fournette, and I had the receivers were shaky, but I felt pretty good about it. Anyway, what I've learned again in doing these mock drafts, and these computerized mock drafts, keep in mind, and I'm not blaming anybody on Fantasy Pros. I think it's a really good tool, and it's helpful, and you can do it in minutes. It's super quick. So you can do that there, other sites to do it as well. But I will say this for probably the 10th season in a row. Every season I've been broadcasting, you do not have to take a quarterback early. Just wait. I picked 12th. I got Jimmy Garoppolo. I could have gotten Matt Ryan or Phil Rivers or somebody else. Just wait. You can wait till double-digit rounds to get the QB. And if you want Russell Wilson or you want Aaron Rodgers, I get it. But the end of the year, there's usually a couple of guys that separate themselves, but the rest of them are all packed in together, separated by about a 1 or 2 point per week average, which in most instances doesn't impact your record or your standings from a point perspective, not by much. So that's what I'm saying, wait and load up on the other positions, which suffer injuries at a greater rate and all that kind of stuff. Now, you had Aaron Rodgers last year, it probably upended your season to some extent because you might have drafted him early and then you lost him, but even more reason to just wait on the QBs. So there we go. Kev, what are your questions that you have for me?
So I'll start then in line with the quarterback, because as I was doing a lot of these best balls, there were questions that I had to answer for myself, but there were also just some points of notes. So this is more of a point of note. Currently based on ADP, and it is shifting a bit, but I overall, Deshaun Watson at the moment is second on the ADP on the draft app, and I would say pretty much consistently is always going in the top three, at worst the top five. And to me, it has been somewhat jarring, and maybe it shouldn't be. I know he was awesome when he was healthy last year, but that's part of it, is that he is coming off of the big injury, and sometimes I don't know if we're just maybe getting ahead of ourselves. Like, there are times where I saw him go as the first quarterback, top three. It just feels somewhat lofty to me, but maybe does that feel right, Deshaun Watson as one of the first three quarterbacks to go, regardless of where? Because I agree with your waiting point, but you think that he should be within that top three?
No, I do not. I think it's too lofty. Yeah, I think he's top 10 and he could push to top five, but in general, I'm going to wait. So somebody else is going to draft him, and you do yourself a favor from a macro standpoint by fading injury prone players. Or guys coming off of injuries. You see it a lot more in baseball than you do even in football, but I'm much likely to back off of a guy like that. Now, he could be declared 100% healthy and maybe on one of my six or seven or eight teams that I have this year. I have a share of Deshaun Watson, but he's not a guy I would target. It's unlikely that I would have him. Last year in some drafts, I had Drew Brees because there got to a point in drafts where like sixth or seventh round, and you know, in expert drafts, they're going to tell you what I just told you, to wait on quarterbacks. So when you get into an expert's draft, everybody waits, and it's a game of chicken to see who drafts first. And then it gets to the point where it's like, gosh, should I draft Bilal Powell or Drew Brees? And it's like, I'm just going to take Drew Brees because this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to take him now in the sixth round, to the end of the sixth round, because that's an appropriate value. So I always like to couch that, because I don't say things with absolutism behind it. And some hosts and some writers will have you doing that, but they're steering you the wrong way, because absolutism in these types of discussions is ridiculous. You need some wiggle room, and you need to account for those scenarios. I would tell you, wait on a quarterback, and then what happens? Scott Fishbowl, everybody's loading up, is an industry draft. Everybody's loading up on tight ends because there's bonuses for tight ends. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to wait to take Jack Doyle and Kobe Fleener, and then boom, it's the sixth round and Drew Brees is sitting there and I take him. So something like that happens. So there you go. I won't have Deshaun Watson. I'm seeing him right now ranked on Fantasy Pros fourth behind Rodgers, Wilson, and Brady. I have no doubt that in your app, in the draft app, he's a top three. But yeah, that seems a little high to me. I don't know that their offense projects quite that high for him to put up that numbers. I think people might be extrapolating a little bit too much regarding his really good month out there. Was it month, 6 weeks maybe? So reality is, I'm open to Deshaun Watson having a really good year, but I wouldn't be taking him there in the top five. Because the guys right behind him are Cam Newton, Carson Wentz, Drew Brees, Kirk Cousins. Like,
yeah.
I probably feel more comfortable with three of those guys than I would Watson. You know, Wentz is coming off an injury, too. I'd probably fade Wentz, too, because I don't know that he's going to be ready for week one. And, you know, nobody's committed in Philly for him being ready to week one. They're obviously comfortable if he's not ready for week one. And worst case scenario, they have to go pup list and he comes back after six games. I think they'd be okay with that, too. Like, great. Then Carson will just be healthy for his 10 games in the playoff run. And Foles can just chip in and win four of those six games to start the season.
Yeah.
I'm painting a doomsday scenario, right? That's not doomsday, but I'm painting a bad scenario. And I just, you know, I don't think Wentz plays 16 games this year, even if it's 15. He might not. I'm not guaranteeing it. He might not, right? Like, we don't know if he's going to be. He got hurt late in the year.
Do you think he could start game one and just maybe, like, take a game? Or
No. It'd probably be not start the season.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's like, I'm sore and I gotta take week three off. It won't be
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I gotcha.
It'll be like, you know what? We're just going to wait an extra week or two.
I think that's fair. Can I ask
so
quickly?
What are your other questions?
On the fishbowl thing, I got an invitation. Is there a thing that you have to do when you get it? I know you're supposed to do the donation, but is there another step to accepting?
I don't think so. Okay. I thought that myself. I donated as well. I don't think so. I think we're just you know what? Maybe I did link to something. Well, he hasn't whacked up the divisions or anything yet. So it's a good question. I'll probably check after the show, but I think I'm good to go. I mean, I've tweeted back and forth to Scott. He's a really good guy, by the way. Mm-hmm. So Scott Fishbowl, just to back up, I don't like throwing around industry terms and stuff like that when people don't know necessarily what we're talking about. So Scott Fishbowl is an industry-wide league. It's 720 teams. There are 60 divisions of 12 teams. He also sets up, in conjunction with it, an organization that he runs called Fantasy Cares. I think it's fantasycares.net. And it encourages those participating, both fans and experts, to donate. And I don't know what the breakdown is, if it's half fans or half experts, it may be that. The format of the league really ends up being you can't call it best ball because you are making transactions during the year, but there's no trades allowed. And really, you need to build a team that is going to score a lot of points, because ultimately, which you do in every format, but in this one, head-to-head record isn't quite as important as putting up big points each and every week, especially through the playoff run. So you're really trying to draft with a bent towards a best ball type of format, or a roto type of format, as opposed to a head-to-head. You need to really put up a lot of points. I had a good team last year. I lasted a long time in it. I think I probably bowed out with a couple of weeks to go. But, you know, I made like the top 120, and then I think I got into the top 60, and then I think I got eliminated after that. My one mistake, quote-unquote, in that league was I cut Kenyon Drake right before the Ajayi thing went down. So I had drafted him and Damian Williams thinking that Ajayi wasn't going to last the year. I just didn't trust that he would last the year healthy. I didn't know he was going to be traded, but healthy. So, but there came a point where I needed to make a transaction. Kenyon Drake literally had like 2 fantasy points on the season. I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to guess. I think it's probably Damian Williams and not Kenyon Drake. So I cut Kenyon Drake instead of Damian Williams. The rest is history. If I had Kenyon Drake, I honestly, I would have had a chance to go really far in that league. But Todd Gurley winner probably won the whole thing anyway. Todd Gurley owner probably won the whole thing anyway. So anyway, that's my long answer. So I don't know if we have to do anything, but fantasycares.net, I encourage everybody to go there because he uses all the funds to go on like a Toys for Tots type of shopping spree and give gifts to underprivileged children. So he's a really nice thing that he does. And he's an incredible person in the fantasy industry and an incredible commissioner. He's a commissioner of this entire league and other huge leagues as well. So anyway, it's hashtag SFB8, I guess, is what it'll be this year. So
yeah, make sure you check that out.
What else you got, Kev?
So I was looking at the tight ends, and one jumped out to me, and I definitely thought it'd be good for us to discuss because of I know you are a Greg Olsen guy. Was Greg Olsen or Jimmy Graham?
Love Greg Olsen. I'm always going to take Greg Olsen there. I mean, he just signed a 2-year extension.
Mm-hmm.
He had the broken foot last year, which is a significant concern for me, especially as he's an older player. But he was able to produce upon coming back. You know, he was in the lineup, out of the lineup. Right now, Olsen, the number 5 ranked tight end, Jimmy Graham at 6. I do think the move to Green Bay could be good, but I like the guy being in the same spot and knowing his role a little bit more than what Jimmy Graham's could be. Do you know what I mean? Yes, you would think Aaron Rodgers is going to be happy to have this talented tight end, but Jimmy Graham hasn't been a machine the last couple of years, and it's a new spot. Could be a transitional situation there. I think both good options. I like Jimmy Graham better in Green Bay than I did in Seattle, but I'll still take Olsen there. I'm just an Olsen guy.
I think you're going to have to stop me from overdrafting Jimmy Graham because I'm starting to think that he has a really good chance to lead the NFL in touchdowns. I know there's been a number of stats. They got listed last year when people were starting to overdraft the Packers tight end, whose name it was Bennett, right? Everyone was starting to overdraft Bennett, and they were like,
Martellus Bennett.
Yeah, right. And Rodgers doesn't use his tight end. And the argument that was made is he's never had a tight end like this. Well, that really does apply to Jimmy Graham. Like, he's never had a tight end as good as Jimmy Graham is. And I do also think that is with Jordy Nelson out, there is now a chance that Jimmy Graham becomes his favorite target. Like, yes, he could certainly be Devontae Adams, but I do think that there is a very plausible outcome that Jimmy Graham, at
red
least
zone
in the
target.
Red
not
zone.
Not favorite target, but red zone.
I mean,
target.
He wouldn't out-target Devontae Adams. But I think that he could still become his most reliable guy. He could become his go-to.
He better not be. They give Devontae Adams a lot of money to be that guy. So, I mean, Jimmy Graham did have 10 touchdowns. They did. They gave him, he had 10 touchdowns last year, 57 catches for 520. Year before that, 65 for 923 and 6 touchdowns. So, well, we'll talk a little bit more about this after the break before we get into baseball. Mike and Kevin for hour number 3 on FST. Coming back.